And again, it's my pleasure to introduce Jane Ellen Nickel to the podium at the Unitarian Church. Jane Ellen.
Thank you, Joyce. It is nice to be with you all. I see a lot of familiar faces and some folks I'm hopefully meeting for the first time. I have preached here before, but it's been a while, so I was very pleased when asked to help lead you in worship this fall. As you've been told already, this is Rosh Hashanah, so Shana Tova, Happy New Year. This is the Jewish holiday that is celebrated by blowing the shofar, the ram's horn, lighting candles, symbolically casting sins across the water in a tashlik ceremony. This begins the Jewish high holidays, or the days of awe, which continue next week with Yom Kippur, which is the Day of Atonement. This is the most sacred season in Judaism, but it often sleeps by even those of us who are aware of it. Part of my job as chaplain at Allegheny College was to advocate for the observance of all religions. The Jewish high holidays, though, are especially tricky. They fall at the very beginning of the academic year. It's hard for students when they're on a weekday. It is an excused absence from class, but the onus is on the student to make up the work or to not get behind at the beginning of the semester. When the holidays fall on a weekend, though, you have to disappoint the folks who plan activities. I can still see the sighs of frustration from athletics and alumni affairs when they learned that the home football game that Allegheny could actually win could not be homecoming because it fell on the high holidays. But to Allegheny's credit, they did not have the homecoming on a high holiday. Non-Christian religions just don't fit into our Western calendar, which are shaped around Christianity. Our calendar accommodates the Christian holidays. Sunday's on a weekend, Easter's on a Sunday, Christmas is a national holiday. At best, other religious holidays get overlooked, and at worst, they may provoke violence. Since the shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, synagogues have stepped up their security, especially around the holiday periods. Some people see the otherness of Jews, Muslims, Sikhs, Hindus as a threat to the Christian norm. One could even argue that the rise of white Christian nationalism is a response to the increased visibility of other races, cultures, and religions in our country today. But even those of us who welcome diversity often do so through a Christian filter. If we ask most Americans to name a Jewish holiday, what do you think most of them would say? Hanukkah. Yes, Hanukkah. In seeking to be inclusive, those of us who value that often sort of promote Hanukkah as a way to sort of balance that heavy weight of Christmas, the Christian holiday that's burst from its roots in that religion to dominate store shelves and the Hallmark Channel for several months every year. If you read the Medial Tribune, you saw that the front page, top of the fold story was, countdown to Christmas, it's only 100 days away, so here we go. It's technically still summer, and yet Christmas has started. So we try to pierce that heavy veil of Christmas by promoting other holidays around this time, like Hanukkah, like Kwanzaa. The phrase, the December dilemma, describes the bind that we find ourselves in, but that dilemma goes beyond just wishing people happy holidays instead of Merry Christmas. And it poses the problem of elevating what is a fairly minor holiday for most Jews to equal status with Christmas. We end up making Hanukkah the most visible Jewish holiday, and as a result, more people know about Hanukkah than they do about the high holidays or even Passover. We make a big deal of a minor Jewish festival, while the truly important Jewish holidays slip by most of us. Now, humans naturally look for connections when learning about something new. When we meet someone for the first time, we try to find something that we have in common. When we learn someone is from the same town we are, we go, oh, what street did you live on? Where'd you go to school? Did you know so-and-so? We look for a point of connection. And in seeking to understand a religion that is new to us, we naturally look for a connection to something that's familiar. Christmas and Hanukkah fall at the same time of the year. They both involve lighting candles, giving gifts to the delight of children and merchants. Both have fun songs that are joyful and fun to sing. But when we force Hanukkah into the framework of Christmas, we don't let Hanukkah be Hanukkah. We remake it in the image of something that we know. From its earliest days, our country has cast religions in the mold of Protestant Christianity. Since the earliest Puritan settlers, Protestant Christianity dominated the United States religious life until recent decades. In the process, it became the model for what religion looks like. To be recognized as organized religion, other faith traditions historically had to fit that mold. In order to look more like Protestant clergy, rabbis, imams, gurus, Hindu priests, Buddhist monks took on roles that mirrored Protestant ministers. They became administrative as well as religious leaders in their communities. They joined ministerial groups and made hospital visits. Other religions adopted names that reflect Protestantism, such as the Buddhist Churches of America that was founded in 1944. Judaism, especially Christianity's near ancestor, provides a clear example of such religious assimilation. Reform Judaism actually started in Germany as a way to incorporate some features of modernism into Orthodox Judaism, but it largely took shape in the United States in the 19th century. And the shape it took, of course, was Protestant Christianity. Jewish services were in English, led by rabbis instead of the Jewish custom of fuller congregational participation. They ended congregational seating that was segregated by gender. They used mixed choirs and organs. They sang hymns. I was helping Hillel clean out the local Jewish community center a few years ago, and I found a whole set of hymnals from the 1920s. First of all, they opened right to left instead of left to right, as a Hebrew text would. And they were full of four-part hymns in English. It could have been a Methodist hymnal at first glance. A few Reformed congregations even moved their Shabbat services to Sunday morning instead of Friday night or Saturday morning. The issue came to a head in 1883 when a dinner to honor the first graduates of Hebrew Union College served four trefa foods. These are foods that are contrary to kosher law. This infamous trefa banquet was the catalyst for a counter-movement that led to the formation of conservative Judaism, which falls between Orthodox and Reform. And as it became more established in this country, Reform Judaism recovered many of its more Jewish ways. Part of this assimilation to Protestant form that other religions go through was practical. To gain recognition as a legitimate organized religion, including tax-exempt status, you had to look like Protestant Christianity. Note, American Catholicism went through a similar process, not quite as extreme, but some formal changes. But assimilation also led to acceptance or fitting in. To look like what the dominant culture saw as religion, other faiths tried to fit that definition as closely as possible. It's the same struggle that individuals go through in a new culture. How much can you assimilate without losing your distinct identity? For too long, our country has laid out the welcome mat for those who look and act most like us. We are more comfortable with those who do not challenge our sense of self, both as individuals and as religions. We can best honor other religions by letting them be themselves, just as we fully accept another person for who they are. Not how they reflect us or what they can do for us. Now, I recognize that I'm preaching to the choir here. Unitarian Universalism draws on diverse religious and secular wisdom. I consider myself a pluralist who respects the validity of other religions. But we pluralists don't necessarily run the risk of trying to convert or remake other religions. But we have to be careful to tread that line between appreciation and appropriation. Most of us respect that some rituals cannot be opened to other people, and we welcome invitations to religions, rituals in other religions where they do invite us, but we get into dangerous territory when we conduct such rituals ourselves, even if it's in a sincere effort to understand or experience another religion. A problematic trend that has emerged in recent years has been the Christian Seder. Have any of you heard of the Christian Seder? Are you aware of this? Yeah. It's right here in Meadville, folks. I won't name names, but it's a Christianized version of the Passover meal that churches enact on Maundy Thursday to better understand the Last Supper that Jesus had with his disciples on that night. So the Seder is not an exclusive ritual. Anyone can attend. Many Jews invite their Gentile friends into their Seders. I've been invited to friends' Seders. Some of you probably have as well. Allegheny Hillel, for many years, offered a teaching Seder that drew sometimes over 100 people from across campus in order for the campus community to better understand that ritual. But it becomes problematic when non-Jews lead a Seder, especially given the history of the Christian persecution of Jews. The Episcopal Bishop Dion K. Johnson last spring issued a statement that read in part, "Christian Seders cast Jesus not only as the messianic Paschal Lamb, but seek to replace or supersede Judaism's covenant with God. Christians celebrating their own Haggadah outside of Jewish practice is deeply problematic and is supersessionism in its theological view. Christian communities hosting Seders is additionally problematic because it contributes to the objectification of our Jewish neighbors." I point out to my Christian friends, this would be like Jews having a communion ritual in order to understand how their Seder was transformed by Jesus for his followers. Leading a ritual from another religion, no matter how sincerely done, always amounts to appropriation. Now, I recognize that many of us practice meditation, yoga, chanting, practices from religions that are not ours, and I think these are less problematic when it's part of private spiritual practice. In this age of spiritual mixing, people take bits and pieces from any religion. The practice is actually termed religious bricolage or religion a la carte. So the phenomenon is prevalent enough to have a couple of names attached to it. There's different views on the ethics of such borrowing, so that's a conversation for another day. But what is always okay is attending an open ritual or celebration when we've been invited by the host religion, such as a Seder hosted by friends. I had such an experience when I attended a service at the Sri Swaminarayan Temple in Weehawken, New Jersey. I went as a site visit that was assigned for a grad school class. And I can safely say it was unlike anything I'd ever experienced to that point in my life. The service lasted over 2 hours. It was conducted in Gujarati, which is a language from Western India. It involved chanting, a long teaching by one of the senior priests, offering food and flowers to pictures of their gods, a closing ritual with all the attendees swaying to a chant and swinging and circling lighted candles. I would have been totally lost without Pooja and Aisha, who were two little girls who came up to me when I got there and kind of befriended me. They helped the lone English-speaking American woman at the service to know what was going on. This congregation of more recent immigrants felt no pressure to assimilate to Protestant Christian ways. And in a lovely reversal, their temple was an old church building. The pews had been removed, and the attendees sat on the floor. The cross and the altar were replaced by a shrine to Bhagwan Swaminarayan, who was the founder of this sect of Hinduism. And the stained glass windows were obscured by vertical blinds. Yeah. You wouldn't have known you were in a church. You could tell from the outside, but when you go inside, it's a whole different world. I thought it was beautiful, a beautiful way to sort of, you know, respond to former ways. I was clearly welcomed. Everyone there was very welcoming, and I was grateful for my young friends who made sure I got through the service. But I have to confess, I never would have gone except as an assignment for class, and that would have been my loss. We live in a great, big, wide, diverse world where immigration and technology allow us to encounter other religions that in the past would have remained in geographical enclaves, or they would have assimilated into paler versions of themselves. Our neighbors nowadays may as well be Buddhist or Muslim as Baptist or Methodist. Some of you know Gray Whitney. Any of you remember Gray? I think he attended here some. He led a Druid circle in Cambridge Springs, you know? If there are pagans in Cambridge Springs, anything is possible today, which is great, you know? We cultivate respectful relationships with other religions through open and honest dialogue, by working together on climate change, racial justice, economic inequality through the interfaith coalitions that have been established to address these and other challenges, by sincerely welcoming those outside our faith who come into our religious space and accepting graciously when we're invited into theirs. There will always be some gray areas and some touchy feelings when encountering religious difference, but hospitality, humility, and respect go a long way towards working through that. So may it be. Amen.